Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. And welcome to part two of our conversations on the erosion of gender equality in China with our guest, Leta Hong Fincher, the author of Leftover Women, The Resurgence of Gender Inequality in China. Her book is based in part on her research for the PhD in sociology, which she received in 2014 from Tsinghua University in Beijing, China. In this second conversation, we discuss the extent of what, if anything, is done about domestic violence in China, the difference in the retirement ages for women and men, and the requirement that women submit to a gynecological examination before obtaining a civil service job. When Leta Hong Fincher and I visited by phone on August 9, 2014, we began with a discussion of domestic violence in China.
If you look at the official statistics on domestic violence in China, the government statistics say that about a quarter of women have experienced domestic violence. But if you talk to feminist activists who have been working on this issue, they will say that the real incidence of domestic violence in China is far higher than the official statistics indicate. The problem with domestic violence in general in China is that there is still no nationwide legislation on domestic violence or intimate partner violence. So there are some parts of China that have pilot programs or local laws or regulation to try to control it. But there's no nationwide legislation on intimate partner violence. This is a big problem because through the research that I did, which I might add was not focusing on domestic violence, it's just that it's such a big problem that a lot of the women I interviewed told me that they'd been abused by their husbands. And this was not something that I was specifically researching. But the women that I interviewed who had been abused by their husbands really were in a very desperate situation.
Can you describe the desperate situation?
If a woman wanted to protect herself from her abusive husband, then the first thing she would do, if the woman is willing to be courageous enough to do something to protect herself. So first of all, it's important to realize that a lot of women don't even take that first step, that they simply take the abuse and they don't complain to anybody outside their family about it. So that's actually a global problem. But in China, if the woman takes the step of calling the police to report the violence, the police generally come and they say, well, this is family conflict. And both you, both the husband and the wife, or both the man and the woman, usually there's a man involved, are at fault. So the police don't have a legal basis for blaming the man. And usually the violence is perpetuated by the man. So that's on the first level. But then if the woman wants to take it a little farther, she can go to the hospital to have the injuries inflicted by her male partner recorded at the hospital. So even if the woman reports the violence to the police and then she goes to the hospital to document the injuries, that does not hold up as evidence in a Chinese court by and large, because there's no law on domestic violence specifically. So Chinese judges find it very, very difficult to rule that domestic violence has taken place. They have no legal basis on which to make that ruling. So if the woman has taken it so far that she's actually gone to court to file for a divorce from her abusive husband, then first of all, it will be very difficult for her to win that case because there's no nationwide law really supporting or punishing perpetrators of domestic violence and supporting the women who are victims of domestic violence. And then even if in the very rare instance where a woman will actually win a court case on domestic violence, then that ruling has to be enforced. And there are a lot of problems getting legal rulings enforced in China. And that's not even getting into the very difficult problem of the stigma for a woman who speaks out about her abusive husband.
In your interviews with several hundred women about their situation as single and married adults in China, with regard to domestic violence, did you see any recurring themes of what the cause of the violent behavior was?
Well, first of all, I might add that my study included both women and men. And so my total sample size was 283 people. And so I did interview more women than men, but I also interviewed quite a lot of men. But with regard to the causes of domestic violence, that's really not something that I was researching. And I hasten to add that domestic violence is a really serious global problem. So my emphasis on this issue, I talk about it in my book, it's not that China is so unusual in having domestic violence. It's that the women who are abused by their male partners, if you want to talk about the LGBTQ community, I mean, there is also domestic violence there. But basically, somebody who is abused by their partner basically has no recourse. This has several reasons, and one of them is the lack of a nationwide law dealing with domestic violence. And another is simply the myriad problems with China's rule of law, that effectively China's legal system is full of holes. So even if there is a good law, and there are some very good laws on paper protecting women's rights, they may not be enforced at all. The legal system itself is extremely faulty, to put it mildly.
You mention the fact that all women who are seeking civil service jobs are subjected or required to submit to gynecological exams. Why is that the situation for women and not similar reproductive exams for men?
Well, that's really an excellent question. And on that issue of gynecological tests for women applying for civil service jobs, that was one of the topics for feminist activist protests in China. These activists said basically what you did, which is that there is a double standard. Why aren't men subjected to invasive examinations of their reproductive organs? Why is it only women? And I certainly don't represent the government, and I can't speak to why that is, but I can certainly say that there is widespread gender discrimination in China, certainly throughout the government and throughout society. And this is one of the big problems. Even though the government still pays lip service to gender equality was a rallying cry for the communist revolution. That today, women are severely disadvantaged in many ways. And state policies, there are many state policies that blatantly discriminate against women.
So what are some of the other state policies?
Well, for example, another state policy that's blatantly discriminatory against women is completely different retirement ages. So women are generally expected to retire 5 to 10 years earlier than men. And this is just accepted. It's part of government policy. And the government has certainly talked at times about maybe raising the retirement age overall, but there's no serious discussion of closing the gender gap in enforced retirement ages. There are also, more recently, very new gender-based quotas in university admissions. So this is another area where some feminist activists in China have taken action and have protested against the Ministry of Education for basically setting a lower standard for men applying to certain university programs, requiring women to score higher on the university entrance exam for certain university programs. And this is yet another sign of blatant gender discrimination.
Within the Chinese government, what is the gender ratio between men and women?
The government is a huge body, so I think it's important to look at the very, very highest levels of government. So the very highest organ of the Chinese government is the Standing Committee of the Politburo, and it's all men today. You've never had a woman on the Standing Committee, ever. The men on the Standing Committee wield ultimate power in China. So it's really not that significant that there are a handful of women. There have been a handful of women serving a little bit below the Standing Committee. There haven't been that many women. And then if you look at the Central Committee, which is another Communist Party, part of the Communist Party, the female political representation on the Central Committee is extremely low. It's actually lower now than it was during Mao's era. So basically, female political representation at the highest levels in China is extremely low.
In this edition of Radio Curious, we're visiting with Leita Hong Fincher, the author of Leftover Women, The Resurgence of Gender Inequality in China. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Leita, let's move the focus of what we're talking about to women who are fighting back in China against oppression. And in your book, Leftover Women, The Resurgence of Gender Inequality in China, you make the point that art is one of the forms of fighting back. Tell us about that.
Well, when I interviewed some of what I believe to be the most radical feminist activists in China, they did not like to use the term protest. So they describe their acts of resistance as a form of performance art. So this may take the form of going outside and shaving off all their hair to demonstrate their opposition to a particular policy. And in fact, shaving off all their hair has been used quite a lot of times by these feminist activists. And they call this performance art. And if you see them, I've seen this a couple of times. If you see it, it is a very sober ritual that does have an artistic element to it, and an element of live theater. It's a spectacle, and yet they're trying to avoid being labeled as forming any kind of opposition to the Communist Party, because, of course, all political movements are very tightly controlled in China. I mean, there's the ruling Communist Party, and then any forms of opposition are very quickly nipped in the bud. So these women who are very courageous in China, and they want to take a stand to raise awareness about the low status of women or abuses of women's rights, they have to be extremely careful about how they do it. Otherwise, they could be completely shut down as an organization.
How was it done without being shut down?
Well, the thing is that there are certainly feminist activists who will engage in performance art, or that there are feminist artists who are clearly making a bold statement about women's rights, but they call themselves artists. Even these women who are taking part in what they themselves call performance art may still be harassed by the police. And even when they engage in what they call performance art, they may still be closed down as an organization or not permitted to form a legal organization. So these activists are very beleaguered.
Leda Hong Fincher, you imply in your book, Leftover Women, The Resurgence of Gender Inequality in China, that the repression is enforced by the government to maintain stability in the country. Stability, what do you mean?
Well, the Chinese government is really obsessed with maintaining political stability. It calls political stability basically social stability. And there is a huge amount of money designated for maintaining social stability. These are called stability maintenance funds. And in recent years, as China's economy has really grown significantly and the government has a lot more money at its disposal, it has spent a lot more money on maintaining domestic stability. So that may mean anything from hiring more police to patrol people who may make trouble, to make sure that protests don't get out of hand, to bribe protest leaders to attempt to get them to stop doing what they're doing. That's not really the focus of my research, but if you look at the overall budget for China's defense and compare it with the budget for domestic security, over the past few years, the budget for maintaining domestic stability has exceeded the defense budget. So that tells you that the government is more concerned about internal threats to its stability than it is about foreign invasions. My criticism is very specifically focused on their recent inattention to extreme gender inequalities that have been exacerbated by these breakneck economic reforms of the past few decades. Most recently, with the so-called Leftover Women Media campaign, that is intensifying pressure on urban educated women. But these women are the most talented, highly educated women in the country. These are the most talented women taking part in the workforce. So if you're applying systematic pressure on these women to stop focusing on their careers and to find a good husband instead, you're effectively telling them that they need to return to the home. And some women are going to drop out of the workforce altogether. Others are going to hold themselves back from promotion. And any way you look at it, if you're losing the most talented women from the workforce, in the long run, that's going to be bad for China's economic development.
Well, Leda Hong Fincher, I appreciate your insight into the resurgence of gender inequality in China, as you detail in your book, Leftover Women. And I'm curious about you, your bilingual background, your experiences that drew you to recently obtain a PhD in sociology in Beijing.
Well, I'm a longtime journalist. I'm an American with a Chinese-American mother, and my mother raised me speaking Chinese. She's a linguist. And my parents were both China scholars, and so I've been traveling to China all my life. I went frequently as a child, and then as an adult, I also worked there a lot as a journalist for various news organizations. So China has been a big part of my life. I consider myself to be Chinese American, but China, you know, is part of my blood. So I have an intense personal interest in this country. And it wasn't until I moved back to China with my family in 2009, when the Chinese Foreign Ministry actually delayed my journalist visa. And they're doing that with quite a few foreign correspondents now. As they were delaying the issuance of my journalist visa, I started thinking about doing something else. And I was already living in Beijing with my family. And so basically, that's how I wound up in this PhD program at Tsinghua University. And I have to say, it's been an extremely valuable learning experience.
During the course of your work and your interviews that you've shared with us, did you find any personal resistance to you and what you were doing?
Well, that's also an interesting question. I found in the course of my research that there was a real longing on the part of women and men to speak to somebody about their lives. What I was studying really goes to the heart of what Chinese people are really concerned about, which is how to buy a home, how to live and get by in an intensely competitive and difficult environment. It wasn't until after I started writing about my research, and then it became clearer over time, particularly when my book came out, that I am taking a feminist stand because I was quite disturbed by what I found, and that I started to really emphasize gender inequality. Then I encountered more resistance, particularly from Chinese men who really didn't like what I was saying, who complained that I'm an outsider who doesn't understand China. A lot of these men may be very sexist, to be perfectly frank. By and large, young Chinese women have been extremely enthusiastic about what I have to say because I'm identifying forces outside themselves that create this intense pressure for them to marry, and that a lot of them find empowering. But there are still some women who don't like what I'm saying, and they also may say that I'm an outsider, I don't understand the situation, and I have no right to comment at all about China.
Going back to the broader history of your life, can you share with us a eureka or an aha moment that changed your view of the world or instituted a pattern by which you now live?
I really don't think that there was a single eureka moment. But I might, if I'm just talking about my research, there definitely was. I started out my research by looking at the Chinese obsession with buying homes and the role of gender norms in home buying. And I was completely baffled as to why so many very intelligent, educated young Chinese women would simply transfer their life savings over to their boyfriend to buy an expensive home and not put their name on the deed and basically forfeit ownership of this valuable property and basically give up all of their economic power within the marriage. And it simply didn't make any sense to me. But then when one of the women I interviewed talked about being at that so-called leftover age, and so she was under intense pressure to marry, then when I started researching the whole Leftover Women media campaign, then I had a eureka moment, and I realized that this is One of the key factors that explains why so many women are just very insecure themselves. They really believe a lot of the propaganda that they're fed about being too old to find a husband once they're past their late 20s. And even if these women are extremely educated and intelligent, it's extremely difficult for them to resist these norms because they're just getting hit from all directions by the same messages telling them that if they wait too long, they will never be able to find a husband.
And what would you like to do with the remainder of your one precious life?
That's a tough question. I have to say that I have been very driven in writing this book, which kind of comes out of my dissertation research. I feel quite passionate about it. I like to get the message out to Chinese women that they really don't need to get married if they don't want to, if they haven't found the right person, that they need to protect their own interests. So I would be very keen to continue working on finding ways that women and girls can empower themselves and finding ways that governments can work more to protect women's and girls' interests and trying to make gender just a central focus of policymakers around the world.
And finally, Leta Hong Fincher, is there a book that you could recommend to our listeners?
I would recommend a recent book published by Columbia University called The Birth of Chinese Feminism. And this text was edited by Lydia Liu, Rebecca Carl, and Dorothy Koh. And it contains these really startling translations of essays by a feminist revolutionary who called herself an anarchist, He Yinzhen, and in the Republican era. And so she wrote in the early 20th century about the subjugation of women in Chinese history. And they're truly inspiring and quite shocking essays that are just a revelation.
Well, Leta Hong Fincher, thank you very much for being with us on Radio Curious.
Thank you so much for having me.
Leta Hong Fincher is the author of Leftover Women, The Resurgence of Gender Inequality in China. The book she recommends is The Birth of Chinese Feminism, Essential Texts in Transnational Theory by Lydia Liu, Rebecca Carl, and Dorothy Koh. This program was recorded on August 9th, 2014. There are over 500 archive editions of Radio Curious on our website, www.radiocurious.org, where they're free for you to stream, download, enjoy, and share. We appreciate your curiosity, ideas, comments, and questions. You may reach us by email, curious@radiocurious.org. Christina Onnestad is our associate producer, and I'm host and producer, Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.